60 Books, presented by Store Consulting and Coaching. A technology company has more money, more experience, and a better board than anyone it competes with. 2 years in, it is losing to firms with a fraction of its resources. The executives are individually excellent and collectively useless. They sit in meetings agreeing with each other and then leave and do whatever they were going to do anyway. A new chief executive arrives and spends her first weeks doing something the board finds alarming. She holds off-site meetings and asks people where they grew up. Today, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. In two sentences, teams fail in a predictable sequence that starts with the absence of trust and ends with people caring more about their own status than the collective result. Fix them in order, because each one rests on the one below it. From the reading room, this is 60 Books. I'm Miles. 60 of the best management books of the last 100 years, one per episode, read for leaders and teams who think differently, and for work where AI is now part of the job. Nora, this book is written as a novel, which is unusual for the shelf.
It is a business fable. Roughly two-thirds of it is a made-up story about a made-up company, and the model is explained in about 20 pages at the back. That format is a large part of why it sold, and it is also the first thing we will have to be honest about.
Give me the pyramid.
5 layers bottom to top. Absence of trust, fear of conflict, lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, inattention to results.
Start at the bottom.
Trust, and Lencioni is unusually specific about what he means. He is not talking about predictive trust, the confidence that a colleague will do what they said. He means vulnerability-based trust, the willingness to say I was wrong, I do not know, I need help, in front of the people you work with.
And the mechanism.
Without it, people spend energy managing impressions rather than doing work. His exercises are things like having each person describe where they grew up, how many siblings they have, and the hardest challenge of their childhood. Low-stakes disclosure to make higher-stakes disclosure normal.
Layer 2.
Fear of conflict, which produces what he calls artificial harmony. Meetings that are pleasant and decide nothing, followed by the real meeting in the parking lot. His claim is that a team incapable of open ideological disagreement cannot make a decision anyone believes in.
And that connects up.
Directly to layer 3, commitment. His argument is that people do not need to get their way in order to commit. They need to have been genuinely heard, which is the classic disagree and commit, and it only works if there was a real disagreement to begin with.
Layer 4.
Accountability, and his specific claim here is that it must be peer-to-peer rather than flowing only from the leader. If the only person who calls out a missed commitment is the boss, the team is a hub-and-spoke arrangement rather than a team.
And the top.
Attention to collective results rather than individual status or departmental outcomes. He wants a small number of shared, visible measures that everyone is judged against.
The author.
Patrick Lencioni, born 1965 in California. He worked at Bain, then Oracle, then was a vice president of organizational development at a software company, and in 1997 founded a consultancy called The Table Group.
And the books?
A great many, nearly all in fable form. The 5 Temptations of a CEO, Death by Meeting, The Advantage, The Ideal Team Player. He is one of the most commercially successful management authors alive, and this book has sold in the millions.
Now the neurodiversity turn, and I want to start at the bottom of the pyramid, because that is where I think this book has a real problem.
Vulnerability-based trust, and I want to be careful, because the underlying insight is sound. A team where nobody can admit error will hide errors, and that is genuinely fatal.
But
the mechanism he prescribes is group emotional disclosure, performed on demand, in front of colleagues. Tell the room about the hardest part of your childhood. And there are people for whom that is not a small ask, and the reasons have nothing to do with whether they are trustworthy.
Say who?
Anyone whose personal history is genuinely difficult. Anyone who has learned that disclosure at work has costs, which includes a great many neurodivergent adults who have watched a disclosure change, how they were treated. And anyone for whom performing spontaneous personal warmth in a group is effortful in a way it is not for others.
And what happens to those people in this framework?
They get read as low trust, which in this model is the foundational dysfunction. The person who is entirely reliable, who says what they will do and does it, and who declines to discuss their childhood with the sales director, has been placed at the bottom of the pyramid.
Now he explicitly dismisses the alternative.
He does, and this is where I would push back hardest. He calls predictive trust insufficient, almost a lesser form. But predictability-based trust, meaning I know what you will do and you do it, is more accessible, more verifiable, and arguably more robust than disclosure-based trust. It does not depend on how anyone felt in a room on a Tuesday.
So what is the repair?
Keep the goal and widen the routes. The actual objective is that people can say I was wrong and I do not know. You can build that with structure instead of intimacy. Written pre-mortems. Blameless post-mortems, which we met with Collins in episode 1. A standing agenda item where the leader goes first and says what they got wrong. Those produce the same behavior without requiring anybody to perform openness.
Layer 2 is friendlier to us.
Much. Fear of conflict and artificial harmony describe an organization that has trained everyone to nod. And the person most likely to break artificial harmony is the person who says the true thing without checking the room first.
Which is the trait that gets penalized.
Under this framework, it is the trait the team needs. Lencioni would call that person a resource for mining conflict. Most performance reviews call them abrasive. Same behavior, and the difference is entirely in whether the organization has read this book.
What about accountability?
This is the layer I would flag as risky. Peer-to-peer accountability is powerful, and it is also social pressure without a formal process. If the standards are written down, it is fair. If the standards are unwritten norms about tone, responsiveness, or how present someone seems, then peer accountability is a mechanism for enforcing conformity, and it will land hardest on whoever is already visibly different.
And there is a tool in the book I want to name.
He recommends personality profiling to help teams understand each other, and the Myers-Briggs indicator appears. That instrument has poor test-retest reliability and weak predictive validity, and it should not be load-bearing in a workplace. It is also the sort of thing that gets used to reframe an access need as a personality quirk, which is the exact downgrade we warned about in episode 12.
There is a second book's worth of material he folds in about meetings, and I want it because it is the most concrete thing he offers.
His argument is that meetings are terrible because we run one undifferentiated kind for every purpose, so a 5-minute administrative item and a strategic decision compete for the same attention. He wants them separated by type. A short daily check-in. A weekly tactical meeting for metrics and obstacles. A separate monthly strategic meeting for the 2 or 3 hard questions. And a quarterly offsite.
And the rule that makes it work.
That the strategic topics are never allowed into the tactical meeting, because they will eat it and be handled badly.
Say the neurodivergent version.
Enormously helpful. A meeting with one declared purpose, a known length, and a known format is something a person can prepare for. The undifferentiated meeting, where the agenda drifts and the mode shifts without announcement, requires continuous real-time recalibration, which is expensive for anyone and very expensive for some.
And the preparation point.
Worth stating plainly. If topics are published in advance, the people who think well slowly arrive with their thinking done. If they are not, the meeting systematically rewards whoever thinks fastest out loud, which is a trait rather than a qualification.
What has not held up?
Begin with what it is. The evidence in this book is a novel. The company is invented, the executives are invented, and the turnaround is written by the person proposing the model. That is not a criticism of fables as teaching tools, and it does mean there is no case here at all in the evidentiary sense.
Has the model been tested?
Not meaningfully as a causal hierarchy. There is no good evidence that the 5 sit in that order, that fixing one unlocks the next, or that the sequence matters. The assessment instrument is a commercial product from the author's own firm. The pyramid is a teaching device that has been mistaken for a finding.
And the overlap with real research.
This is the honest part. The strongest layers, trust and conflict, are gesturing at psychological safety, which has been studied properly and which we will do carefully when we reach Amy Edmondson. If a chief executive quotes this book at you, the useful move is to translate it into that literature, where the ground is firmer.
One more criticism, which is about the fable itself.
In the story, the resistant executive is eventually removed, and the team improves. That is a very tidy resolution, and it teaches a lesson the author may not intend. That the person who will not participate in the trust exercises is the problem to be excised.
And in a real organization.
The person declining the exercise may be protecting themselves for excellent reasons, or may simply be someone for whom the format does not work. A framework that ends with removing the holdout is a framework with a disparate impact, and nobody running it will describe it that way.
The tier.
A fable with a memorable model, no empirical support for its structure, and one genuinely valuable idea, which is that pleasant meetings are frequently a symptom rather than a sign of health.
The recap in this show's frame. 5 Dysfunction says teams fail from the bottom up, starting with trust. For a neurodivergent leader, or one leading neurodivergent people, the operating instructions are these. Keep the objective of the trust layer and drop the prescribed method, because reliability is a legitimate form of trust and mandated personal disclosure is a tax collected unevenly. Treat the person who breaks artificial harmony as the asset the model says they are. Insist that peer accountability runs against written standards rather than unwritten norms about tone. And keep personality typing out of decisions about people, because it is not measuring what it claims to measure. And AI.
The useful angle is that most of this book is about what happens inside meetings, and meetings are the least accessible artifact in an organization.
Go.
The mechanism the book wants is that disagreement surfaces before a decision rather than in the parking lot afterward. Written pre-reads and a synchronous comment do that better than a room does, and these tools lower the cost of producing them. A person who cannot get a word in during a fast meeting can put a considered objection in the document the night before, and it cannot be talked over.
And on the accountability layer.
Commitments in writing, with owners and dates, generated from the meeting rather than remembered from it. That removes the working memory tax, and it also removes the argument about who agreed to what.
The danger.
2. If the model's answer to distrust is more disclosure, a tool that drafts your disclosures for you produces performed vulnerability, which is worse than none. And the usual caution. Evidence that AI support improves outcomes for neurodivergent workers is early and mostly practitioner reports. Promising practice, not established fact.
Nora, thank you.
Of course, thank you, Miles.
That is the 5 dysfunctions of a team. Next time on 60 Books, The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle and the uncomfortable question of what a group is actually reading when it decides you belong. I'm Miles. See you then.